Thank you very much, Rabbi Weinberg. Before I begin discussing the remarkable Sefer Derech Hashem, I'd like to briefly speak about the Ramchal himself, who he was. When we're able to appreciate who the author is of some of these works, we relate to the works very differently. The Ramchal was born in 1707. He grew up in Padua, Italy. His Rebbe was Rabbi Yeshaya Bassan, one of the great Achronim, who authored a number of Sfarim. Now, by age 14, he already had accomplished a tremendous amount. One of his contemporaries wrote in a letter that by age 14, Ramchal had already mastered and memorized all of the Kabbalah writings of the Arizal. Not that at age 14, after his bar mitzvah, he started opening these Sfarim, that by age 14, he had them all memorized, the writings of the Arizal, which are encyclopedic and incredibly difficult. Now, fast forward a few years later, can imagine he's accomplishing more and growing more spiritually. And I want to share something with you that is perhaps lesser known. Now, this is documented. This is documented first by a student of his who put this in a letter. And then he himself afterwards, when asked about this, he verified it very humbly, very modestly. He didn't want any of this information to come out. But when he was pressed about it, he said, yes, it's true. At age 20, in the year 1727, it happened to be, it was Rosh Chodesh Sivan, just a few days from now. Ramchal, for the first time, experienced a spirit. A malach of some sort started speaking with him and teaching him secrets of the Torah. It continued by informing him of different yichudim unifications that he could continue doing to bring about more opportunities like this. And eventually, he had many more experiences where high-level malachim would come and teach him, as well as the souls. I'm going to say something, it sounds crazy. Eliyahu HaNavi, Moshe Rabbeinu, Avraham Avinu, Adam HaRishon, they all came and taught him depths of the Torah. This is written in his own handwriting that these are things that he experienced. Now, amongst these experiences, he was instructed to write many works, commentary on Koheles and many other works, but he would write them in the way in which the Zohar is written. Immediately after he'd had this experience, he would just start writing. It would be exactly like the Zohar. For those who are familiar, it's a very distinct, unique type of Aramaic. And he was instructed to entitle this Sefer Zohar Tinyana, the second Zohar, based on the instructions that he received above. He wrote another Sefer. He was instructed the Tikkunim Chadashim, like the Tikkuni Zohar, a new form of it. And he wrote many other works based on these revelations. Now, Ramchal kept all of this as a secret. He was very humble and modest about this. At first, he didn't say it to anybody, not to his parents, not to anybody else. Then a number of his colleagues in the Beis Medrash found out about this, and he had his own little small learning circle where it was kept quiet. But eventually, the word got out. One of them wrote a letter, two letters to individuals in Europe. He was so excited by what he experienced, and the word got out. And Rabbanim from the other communities were astounded. And they were furious. Just 60-something years ago, the Jewish people were still reeling from the Shabtai Tzvi fiasco, where Shabtai Tzvi took ideas from the Kabbalah and distorted them and led a significant amount of Jews in the wrong direction. So the Jewish community in general, and in particular the Ashkenazi community, were very, very suspect and very nervous about anybody claiming to have such spiritual experiences. No less than a young whippersnapper. He was single. He was young. At the time, he wasn't growing out his beard completely, claiming to have these unparalleled experiences. So they really started putting a lot of pressure on him. This resulted in him being forced. He had to take two different oaths to not write in the language of the Zohar that he was instructed to, and then eventually not to teach to anybody works of Kabbalah. Now, not only was he not allowed to do this anymore, eventually they had a Beis Din sit about this, and they decided to take many of his writings and to bury them, and some of them were even burnt. So you can imagine what that would be like for someone like him to go through this experience and to have so many of these writings buried that we don't have access to anymore. Now, this sounds like something which is not normal. This is not a normal claim you hear every Monday and Thursday about different Rabbanim, what experiences they have. Now, when someone makes a claim like this, someone says they're experiencing Eliyahu HaNavi, Moshe Rabbeinu, Avram Avinu, Adam Arishon, they're instructed to write a new Zohar. I'll even go so far as to share that he was told Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was the Sherusa, was the beginning of a certain light that came out to the world. And you, Ramchal, are the Siyuma. You're the conclusion of that energy, of that spiritual force that came in over the time of the Jewish exile, of the Gullus that we're in now. So imagine this young, single guy in his 20s that he was seen as a rabbinic scholar, but not as somebody who was externally incredibly impressive. And he's making claims like this. So now, to me, when someone makes a claim of like that, there's only a few ways to deal with it. Either one, the individual is lying and they never had such an experience. Two, someone came to you in shul and told you they had this experience. You'd think maybe they're crazy. They're having a hallucination of some sort. Or three, they're telling the truth. Yeah, you have to pick one or the other. So after we have the benefit of time where we see who the Ramchal is as one of the giants of our Masorah, that after decades after his death, he was accepted by every segment of Klal Yisrael. The Vilna Gaon and his entire school had tremendous respect, as Rav Moshe Tzvi mentioned earlier. He said he would walk all the way to Padua to learn from the Ramchal. He cherished every word of the Ramchal's writings. The Magen and Mezrich and the Hasidic movement had tremendous respect for him. Once we see that he's one of the giants of our Masorah, so if you have to decide, is the man lying? Is he hallucinating? Or is he telling the truth? Seems to me that the obvious answer is that someone like him is telling the truth. But many of his writings, in particular, some of the letters that he engaged in were not revealed. They were not known until a few decades ago. So for a good segment of time, Klal Yisrael didn't have a clear sense exactly. They had some of the works, but the letters themselves where he himself affirms these experiences, that we didn't have for a good period of time. Now, why is this important to know? Why, when we're learning the Ramchal's works, is important to talk about the experiences that he had and the difficulties that he had to deal with? Why is this important? And I think that anytime you relate to a Sefer, you can't just, as well as you're going to learn the Sefer, you'll read it extra closely, you'll do comparisons, you'll read all the commentaries, until you know who the individual is, what the spiritual stature is of the individual writing it, you're not going to know how to properly appreciate it. It's not the same thing as reading a newspaper, but it's not even reading another Sefer. You have to understand who this individual is. Fine. So that was the general introduction to the Ramchal. Now, I want to turn our attention to the Sefer Derech Hashem that we want to speak about. Now, before we speak about the Sefer Derech Hashem, I want to give an introduction about this Sefer, before we get into the details of the Sefer itself. First, just to talk about the history of the Sefer. For many, many of us, it wasn't necessarily something that we always heard about, the Sefer Derech Hashem. And it happens to be that if you go through the literature of our Masorah, it seems to be missing for a significant part of our Masorah. I mean, the Ramchal himself dies in the year 1746, debated 1746, 1747. For a good chunk of time, there is no reference anywhere in rabbinic literature. There is to the Ramchal some of his writings, but this Sefer Derech Hashem, there's no mention of it at all. Now, it was written in between the years 1740 and 1743, towards the tail end of his time in Amsterdam before he made Aliyah to pass away only a few years later. But what's remarkable is that this Sefer sat on a shelf in the Eitz Chaim Library in Amsterdam for 150 plus years, until a Jew from Russia came by and saw this Sefer and decided he was going to publish it. So it was published once in 1896. It was published a number of few times in the early part of the 20th century, but still it wasn't something that made such a ruckus in the Jewish world. Later on, in later decades, primarily led by Rav Chaim Freelander, the Mashkiach in the Panovitz Yeshiva, so he took many of the Ramchal's teachings and brought them to the attention of his students, to the broader public. You might have seen some of the green volumes of the Ksavim, the writings of the Ramchal. Those were all put out by Rav Chaim Freelander and students of his as well. And he gave Shiurim on Derech Hashem. He now has a green sefer also with a commentary on it. And in the last 20 years, maybe the last 30 years, there's a score of Svarim with commentaries on the Derech Hashem. It's remarkable. The sefer was written 280 years ago. And yet only in the last 20, 30 years do we have, let's say, 10 to 15 commentaries, whereas before that, there was almost nothing. So it really is picking up. Now, it's just interesting when you think about the parallels between the Ramchal and Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Rav Shimon bar Yochai wrote the Zohar. We know there's a comparison earlier that was mentioned that Eliyahu HaNavi told him, you are the flip side of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Rav Shimon bar Yochai wrote a very important sefer called the Zohar. And yet the Zohar wasn't prevalent. It wasn't around the Jewish people for a significant period of time until it came out in the 13th century. It was passed on by individuals, maybe, parts of it. But for the most part, the Jewish people didn't have access to it. Only afterwards, it came out. Something very interesting with the writings of the Ramchal as well. It's taken a while, but now over time, they're finding different volumes in different libraries. Maybe one day, Bezra Hashem will find also all those that are buried somewhere in Germany. We'll find the remaining 40 or so writings that he has that we never have access to. Now, talking about the Sefer Derech Hashem, you can only talk about it so much before getting into it, but just I personally have found it to be an incredibly organized, clear, fundamental explanation of some of the major issues in Jewish thought. Trying to understand, like, what are we doing here? What's the purpose of life? Right, how does it work that Hashem runs the world? Why do different things happen in the world? How do our neshamos work and relate to things in this world? And lastly, like, what's the point behind all the mitzvot that we do on a deeper level? Everything he deals with is on a deeper level. Now, in the Ramchal's introduction to this Sefer, in his introduction, he says something he doesn't write in any of his other works. He says, I want you to pay attention, close attention to every single word that I wrote here. Now, keep in mind, he wrote a lot until this point in time. This is the tail end of his career, of his writing career. The last writing we have from him is in 1743. This work was written somewhere between 1740 and 1743. So it's almost the culmination of his career. And he writes and he says, I want you to pay attention to every single word, what it means and what it's implying. Because every single thing was written here with a intention. And that's important to contrast that Rav Moshe Tzvi mentioned earlier. The Vilna Gaon read up to the 11th chapter of Mesilas Yesharim and said he didn't find in the first 11 chapters one extraneous word. Now the Vilna Gaon is not someone to give compliments. And he had tremendous compliments to say for the Ramchal. He said there wasn't one extraneous word in Mesilas Yesharim. Now, Mesilas Yesharim carries no promises with it to be careful about every single word. Derech Hashem starts off by saying, I'm telling you, pay attention to every word that I've written over here. And he goes on to say in his introduction, if you learn through this Sefer, you will come to understand the fundamentals of Emunah, that which you have to believe in, and Avoda, the fundamentals of what your service is when you're serving Hashem. And then he goes on to say a remarkable sentence. He says, and then you will have acquired, you will appreciate, you will recognize Das Elokim Bechol Chelkei HaTorah. You will understand Hashem's intent. It'll be easier for you, he says. It'll be easier, Mikil. It'll be easier for you to understand Das Elokim, Hashem's intent on every single section of the Torah after you read through this Sefer of mine. This is not a promise that he makes anywhere else. So this is a complete Sefer. This is written with an introduction that is very direct and very clear, and is clear on what the results are. So now let's get our hands a little bit dirty. Let's talk about some of the three major ideas that I personally find to be very powerful from Derech Hashem. The three ideas I want to deal with are, number one, understanding the purpose of this world. It sounds kind of simplistic, but he has what to say about it. Number two, understanding the fundamental uniqueness of the Jewish people. It's so refreshing as a non-apologetic explanation for how are the Jewish people special. And number three, understanding on a deeper level, what does learning Torah do? How does it work? Just to say that you have to learn and it's very important is great. What does it do? So now let's go to our first topic. Understanding the purpose of this world. Ramchal writes in the very second parak of his Sefer, Hine tachlis babriya hayala heitiv mituvo yisparach lezulaso. Hashem's purpose in creating this world is to be meitiv, to bestow goodness onto others. That's what the whole world's about, to be meitiv, to bestow goodness onto others. Now, he had to create others to make this happen, and then to be meitiv to them. But the Ramchal explains as follows. Two premises to keep in mind. Number one, Hashem is perfect. Hashem has absolute shleimus, absolute perfection. When we talk about shleimus as anything else being perfect in any way, shape, or form, it's just a borrowed term. It doesn't actually mean real shleimus, real perfection. The only thing which is real shleimus, absolute goodness, is Hashem. And number two, when Hashem wants to give us goodness, He doesn't have any half measures. He wants to go all the way. He wants to give us the ultimate goodness. If Hashem's going to do it, he's going to do it right. So our two premises are, number one, Hashem is absolutely perfect, absolutely shalim. Number two, when he wants to bestow goodness, he wants to do it in the ultimate way. Ramchal concludes, therefore, how is he going to give us the ultimate goodness? By connecting us to that which is absolutely perfect, to himself, to tap into his ultimate goodness. He wants us to be connected to him, what we refer to as dveikus. So therefore, the purpose of this world is for Hashem to be meitiv, to bestow goodness. He did this by creating a framework whereby his creations can achieve dveikus, connection to him, because that is the absolute goodness that we could tap into. Now, this leads into a very basic question. The basic question is, well, if Hashem wanted to do that, so, I don't know, so much of world history seems to challenge that premise, right? Couldn't he have just done that from the get-go? Couldn't he have just given to us on a silver platter? Why does he have to make so much suffering, so much difficulty, so much sadness in this world? Why not just hand it over to us? Now, some explain by saying, based on a passage in the Yerushalmi, that there's Nahama de Kisufa, the idea that a poor person doesn't want to receive, ideally, the bread of shame. When you get a handout, it's embarrassing. You want to earn something on your own. So elsewhere, the Ramchal suggests this idea, but there's something unsatisfying about it, because that's just basically a psychological rule, that a reality that Hashem could have just gotten rid of, meaning he's not bound to this psychological reality. He could have just made it that you wouldn't feel any embarrassment. When you give your three-year-old something, they're not embarrassed that like they didn't work all day and earn the money to be able to get that candy. They're happy to have the candy. So why is it that Hashem made the world in a way in which he wants us to earn it? He wants us to be the baal, the owner of the tov that we get, and not just to receive it as a handout. Ramchal explains that there's a spiritual law. The spiritual law is that the more similar you are to something, the closer you are to it. The more similar we are to Hashem, the closer we are to Hashem. And therefore, we think about Hashem's perfection. How does Hashem have his perfection? So Hashem's perfection, not that we can really understand it, but minimally we can understand that he didn't get it as a handout from anybody else. Hashem's perfection is something that comes in a self-standing type of way. It came about through himself. It's not something that's externally granted to him. So obviously, it's not the same thing at all. But to the extent possible, Hashem wants us to do the same thing. For us to be close to him, we need to be similar to him. And therefore, we need to put forth our own efforts to be able to earn this closeness to him. By doing that, we're going to be close because we're similar to him. So dveikus is only going to be achieved. Our closeness to Hashem is only going to be achieved when we earn it. Ramchal goes on to say that there's actually something very interesting. Hashem put out inyone shlemus, matters of spiritual perfection in the world. Now, that's going to be that in some way, shape, or form, by using your character traits, perfecting your character traits, by cultivating spiritual understandings, and eventually also mitzvos and all the things that were commanded. Now, Hashem set these up that when you access them, you are accessing shlemus, in the sense that Hashem is the root of all shlemus, all perfection, and every single thing that's out there in the world that's in yonei shlemus, matters of spiritual perfection, when you grab onto it, in essence, you're grabbing onto the branch, but it's connecting you to the root. So when you have good character traits, you're a nice person, you're humble, you develop a spiritual understanding, you do mitzvos, you're connecting yourself to the branch, but it's being connected to the root, to Hashem. And it ends up being a double whammy. By holding onto this branch, by doing that which is a spiritual perfection in this world, so intrinsically, it is shlemus. But beyond that, how'd you get the shlemus? You got it through your own efforts. So you're independently bringing it about through your own hands. Now you're similar to Hashem. Now you're going to be closer to Hashem in two ways. By dint of the act that you did, or the characteristic that you cultivated, and then by the fact that you earned it on your own, it brings you additionally closer to Hashem. So to summarize, our question was, what's the point of this world? What's the point of existence? And the answer is, Hashem wants to bestow goodness, but he set it up in a way in which we need to earn it. By earning it, we're more similar to him. We get closer to him. When we latch onto inyanei shleimus, matters of spiritual perfection in this world, character traits, spiritual understanding, mitzvos, intrinsically by holding onto it, we get closer to the root, to Hashem himself. And beyond that, we're closer to him because we're more similar to him, that we're independently deserving it. Now, we're running a little bit short on time, but when we try to internalize this idea, one thing which bothers, I think, many people is the fact that, well, we don't all seem to have the same challenges, right? It seems to be that all of us are challenged in very different ways. So Ramchal, in his second section of Derech Hashem, has a remarkable paragraph where he says that what Hashem decided to do was to take the totality of all nisyonos, all challenges that he wanted to bring to this world, whereby we can earn our keep, our spiritual keep, and he split it up, he divvied it up between all the different individuals who would be in this world. And therefore, intrinsically, the challenges that you are going to face are going to be different than the challenges that someone else is going to face. Now again, the underlying idea is the same. He wants to bestow goodness on everyone. But he's setting it up a way in which everyone is different and everyone has a different mission. He gives in a mashal, a story, an example. He says it's like a king who has a government, he has a palace that he needs to run. He has different people who have different tasks. Each one is going to be measured based on how well they did their task. Now, what emerges from this is something very interesting. You are not going to be measured based on how well you did in someone else's task. Not only that, if you focus on someone else's task, then you're abandoning your post. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You have your own mission. Now, we all have the same constitution. We have the same 613 mitzvos. But in terms of where our passions lie, what particular areas of serving Hashem, of helping the Jewish people that we're involved in, it's important to realize we're not meant to be cookie cutter. Now, personally for me, I find that in our generation, we say that a lot. We say everyone's special and everyone's different. But more often than not, it comes off as explanation when someone doesn't achieve so well, right? If someone isn't particularly successful, we say, well, listen, everyone's special, everyone's different, you have your own particular mission. But we all have sometimes the same aspirations, either in learning, people want to be a Rosh Hashiva, in working, a successful lawyer, a doctor, in the community, to have a certain role in the community. What the Ramchal is writing in the 1740s is completely unapologetic. He is saying, he's writing this before there's any psychological games we play with children where we get them trying to not feel bad. This is the way it's supposed to be set up. You're supposed to have a different task. And so just when we take into account this first lesson, and we don't have much time for the remaining two lessons, but this first lesson, which is what is the point of this world? It's for Hashem to bestow goodness. That's equal to all of us. That's the point of this world. And every challenge which we are given is part of allowing us to earn our keep, and each one in their own individual way. You're not going to have the same challenge as somebody else. Okay, without much time, I think I'm going to skip the topic of the fundamental uniqueness of the Jewish people, although highly recommended in the Chelek Beis of Derech Hashem. And I want to share with you, in the remaining 4 minutes before we have the tremendous chus of hearing from Rav Moshe Weinberger, the Ramchal discusses, he helps us understand on a deeper level what learning Torah does. I have to read to you just the initial sentence that he has here, and then he has a whole chapter which I'll quickly summarize. He says, "B'chlal ha'shpos ha'nishpos menisparach letzorach b'Yosef." Amongst the many different spiritual influences that Hashem brings down to this world for the sake of His creations, yesh hashpa achas eliyona mikol hashpos. There's one influence, one spiritual energy that is greater than all other energies. She'inyana hu yoser yakar u'meula shebechol ma she'efshar she'imatzeh b'nimtzayim. This is more grand. It is more spiritually precious than anything which could possibly exist. It is, he says, it's me'ein mitzius amiti shalois parach. In some way, it's the closest something could be towards Hashem. He says, and this is where he bestows of his own honor into this world. Now, this energy, you know what he did with this energy? He connected it to that which we know is the Torah. The Torah. The words that we have, the svarim that we have, That is the words, the surface layer, that this energy is underneath. To me, this was a, blew my mind. Torah is not, the energy is not the words themselves, it's the energy underneath it. Now, why is this important? This is important because, in our remaining 3 minutes, he says there are, a person draws down this tremendous energy either by reading words of the Torah Shebichsav, of the Tanakh, or by studying the ideas of what's in the Torah. The Torah Shebaal Peh, and the highest level is the secrets of the Torah. But he goes on to say that there are conditions. And if you don't meet these conditions, then you're merely reading the words and studying the material, but you're not drawing down any of the energy. Two conditions are, number one, he says you have to have yira and kagod when you learn. When a person learns, if they realize the reality with what they're dealing with, they realize this is the most precious energy that exists. This is the engine behind the words of the Torah. So then they will be filled with awe and trembling at the opportunity that they have. They will relate to the books of the Torah and the subject matter of the Torah with tremendous respect. And then you will successfully bring down this energy. But if a person is lacking in that yira, that awe, that trembling, that reverence, he says, then you're not drawing down anything. You can be learning in the Beis Medrash 15 hours a day. You can know the Masechtos back and forth. You won't be drawing down that energy because you're not relating to it in the right way. A second condition is Tikkun HaMaisa. You have to read the user's manual. The Svarim of the Torah tell you how to act. If you don't follow the mitzvos, but you spend 10 years studying Deuteronomy, so you're not, even though you're learning Torah every single day, you're not going to be drawing down any energies. Because you're not following the preconditions that are necessary for the energies to come down. Now, the major takeaway, and with this we'll conclude, the Ramchal writes, he says, for sure, learning more is always important. But to the extent that a person has these qualities, the awe, the trembling, the recognition of the reality that you're dealing with, to that extent you draw down the energy. So if let's say every day you learn 1 hour a day, and you want to get closer to Hashem, for, by all means, learn another 20 minutes, learn another hour. But if in that 1 hour you increase your awe, your trembling, your appreciation of what you're dealing with, he says proportionate to that, you'll bring down a more powerful energy. And to me personally, that just blew me away. I'm going to stop talking now. I'm going to add to the live stream now. We have the tremendous chus and opportunity to hear from Rav Weinberger, Mara da Asra of Eish Kodesh. No further ado.
Okay. I don't know if you're able to hear me. Yeah? Okay. I just have a phone. I don't have a computer. So I don't know if there's anybody that's over there, if I'm talking to myself. I want to thank my dear friend Reb Simcha and the entire Chevra in Boca, Reb Ephraim Goldberg and all the Chevra and my Chevarim who are mishtatif in this. I'm starting from this revolutionary night of trying to.